are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock here on this Tuesday episode. My guest today is Jeff Deeney, Pro Football Focus analyst. I want to talk to him about some of the rookies the 49ers brought in the 2019 draft. I haven't had a chance to talk to Jeff since the draft. We did go over some prospects pre-draft, but I want to get his thoughts, and I love some of the stats he pulls and some of the numbers. And even when I was an analyst at Pro Football Focus, he had some access to some stuff that I didn't, and so I love picking his brain and hearing about some of the deep cuts from PFF. So we'll get into the prospects and the Joe Staley extension. Staley's still playing at a high level, but how much gas is in the tank there? You can find this podcast and just about any other podcast you are looking for on the new Himalaya podcast app. We are also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock. Or just head over to LockedOn49ers.com for everything related to this podcast. My guest today is Jeff Deeney, frequent guest of the show. Always love talking ball with Jeff. He's the analyst at Pro Football Focus. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me back.
We were just talking off the air about that Warriors Game 5 in Toronto, coming back and Oracle Arena living to see one more game in Game 6. That was a fun game, and now we gotta switch our minds back to football mode.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Warriors season ticket holder, well, at least for one more game where we're not moving over to Chase Center, but went to Game 4 the other night, which obviously was really sad, and thought that was probably going to be it. So, fired up for Thursday.
Yeah, and I imagine there's going to be tequila just like flowing down the stairs at Oracle Arena. Did you see Kevin Durant's Instagram about taking a shot of tequila?
Yeah, I did see that. That and bacon wrapped hot dogs for everybody.
That's awesome. So, getting into the 49ers, getting into some football here, let's talk Joe Staley, 2-year extension. So, the wisdom was, okay, they spent a first-round pick on Mike McGlinchey. He's going to play right tackle for a couple years. Then he'll flip over to left tackle, take over for Joe Staley. He's at the end of his contract, not the youngest player anymore. But Staley had a bit of a resurgence last year, or at least had some nice PFF grades. And I thought he played pretty well. And I think Mike McGlinchey still has some development to do, particularly as a pass blocker, one of the better run blockers already in his career. And that was really the MO in Mike McGlinchey coming out of college. But what did you see from Joe Staley last year? And do you think 2 more years, high-level play, is that something worth betting on?
Yeah, I think that's probably legit. I mean, you know, he'll be 35 when the season starts. And, you know, sometimes tackles can, you know, play up to their mid to late 30s. But, I mean, you look at his last 7 years as far as PFF grades go, and he's been an elite tackle. I mean, you know, 2012, he had the top overall grade among all tackles. The last 7 years, he's been in the top six, 5 of those 7 years, including last year when he was 6th. So, I mean, he really hasn't lost much of a step at all. I know he's been kind of been playing year by year, sort of, especially with, you know, how the team has been struggling the last, you know, like since Harbaugh, really. But, I think this is a good signing. I mean, one, just from a PR standpoint, I mean, Joe Staley is a guy you would love to see play his whole career as a 49er and retire as a 49er. But I think he's still playing at an elite level right now. So even if he get a little bit of a drop off on him, you know, his age 35, age 36, or even if he plays till 37, I mean, you're still getting a really good left tackle, and you got, you know, McGlinchey at right tackle is ready to take over maybe a couple of years now and switch to the left side. And, you know, you have a couple of years now to try to maybe develop some other guy, whether it's, you know, Justin Skoll or, you know, I know he's traded for Sean Coleman. He didn't really see the field last year, but, you know, or somebody in the draft the next couple of seasons. But I mean, I think, you know, with the Staley extension, I think, you know, at least for the next couple of years, that offensive line is pretty much set.
You mentioned Justin Skoll there, and I do want to get into the rookies in a little bit. And I think pass rush is going to be massive for the 49ers this year because the edge presence obviously has been lacking. That alone should help the defensive backfield. But from your perspective and looking at grades and looking at how the coverage grades break down, and I know it was an up-and-down year, Akella Witherspoon, I think, is going to be one of the bigger focuses coming into the year if he can really lock down that right cornerback spot. And there's some numbers that look okay. Like it looks like, okay, well, if he improves the rest of it, it looks okay in this area. What do you see overall with Akella Witherspoon's grades, and what do you expect from him in year three of his career?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he had a pretty solid rookie year, and I think, you know, everyone thought he had a lot of potential, you know, going into sophomore season, and, you know, really struggled last year. Kind of had, I don't want to say some bad luck, but, you know, first few weeks, I think he had a couple touchdowns where he had really good coverage, and the ball was just right there, and he wasn't quite able to make a play on it. And I don't know if he's lost some confidence or something else, but, you know, struggled a bit. I know he got benched at least once at one point last year. And, you know, but that's one thing I think, you know, if I've been critical of anything in Arizona in the offseason, I didn't think they had done enough to, you know, shore up the secondary. I mean, I know they did sign Jason Verrett, who I am a huge fan of. You know, he was a guy who, when he was healthy his first two seasons, was an elite cornerback in this league. And if he can stay healthy and even give you like 80, 85% of what he once was, he's still going to be a really, really good cornerback for you. You know, hopefully Witherspoon can bounce back. I mean, you look at their coverage grades last year. They were ranked 32nd in the league last year in overall coverage grade and defense. So, you know, Richard Sherman played pretty well. I mean, I don't think he was ever really healthy last year, and hopefully he's healthier this year. You know, he played well. He wasn't quite the Richard Sherman of old, but still very good. And then after that, you know, there's, you know, Witherspoon and other guys, and, you know, Greg Maybin, and, you know, it was kind of revolving door at that other side. And no one was picking on Sherman. They left him alone. They were just picking on the other side, you know, for most of the season. I think that's the one big hole. Somebody needs to step up there. Either Witherspoon needs to bounce back, or, you know, Verrett can hopefully stay healthy. I mean, I don't think you can really count on him to be the guy. I think hopefully it's one of the things, if he can stay healthy and contribute, then it's just kind of a bonus for you. But, you know, they have Tim Harris they drafted as another guy who's got some potential. And then, I mean, we can talk about Tre'Davious Moore and where he's going to be a corner or free safety this year. But someone on that side needs to step up, I think. And I think, and what you brought up earlier was hopefully the pass rush with the additions of D Ford and Nick Bosa will kind of take some of the heat off the corners. They don't have to be covering for so long.
Do you like Tre'Davious Moore as a safety or as a corner?
You know, he graded a lot higher in college as a safety. I think just looking at his metrics, I mean, I think he's someone who could be free safety. And that was the other position I was kind of stunned that they didn't try to address, especially when Earl Thomas was available and some of these other guys, you know, Trey Boston still floating around. And I kept saying on Twitter, I go, these guys really love Jimmy Ward. And, you know, when Ward plays, he's a nice player, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy his entire career. And sure enough, he didn't even make it through OTAs again without getting hurt again. So I don't know if they had Tre'Davious Moore playing free safety in their back pocket all along, or if it was a reaction to Ward's injury. It looks like, you know, I mean, we'll see when Ward comes back, if he'll be back in time for training camp. But if they're committed to him at free safety, there's a good chance he'll probably get a shot there at some point, at least in training camp, to see if he can play that position.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by that, because Jimmy Ward, in the same boat as sort of Jason Verrett is in, it's like whatever they give you is kind of a bonus, and they've been good players. I think the Verrett thing, like you mentioned, his high level of play was so good that you're like, okay, yeah, let's see what we get with this guy. But the love for Jimmy Ward has been a little bit odd, because he's been a good player, but he's bounced around so much, he hasn't even flashed like what Jason Verrett has. So for them to think, okay, this guy who's been hurt so much and hasn't played, you know, he's played okay, but he hasn't played at this crazy level at free safety, for them to be okay with just that seems it was one of the most surprising things over the course of the offseason. Maybe that's just because they knew they had the ace in the hole there with Tre'Davious Moore, who could flip back to safety, and they must also really love Colbert and fully believed in his ability to be a long-term starter. So, you know, that confidence that you mentioned with the cornerbacks, the communication issues we've seen, a lot of that will probably go together. If the communication is better, the confidence will be better. These guys probably feed off each other. If one plays better, the other guy's going to play better. So maybe they do have something still with Colbert and Witherspoon as young players, but it's just it's an interesting offseason to not try to do more at that position with really how badly they played. And even Richard Sherman, not sure exactly how he's going to look if teams start to go his way a little bit more, because he was basically locking down guys with reputation.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think it was more of a, you know, we were talking about Verrett, if you get 80-85% of him, he's still really good. I think that's what you kind of got at Sherman last year, when he was still coming off the Achilles. And he might have been 80-85% healthy last year. He was still pretty good, but he was probably so much better than whoever was lining up on the opposite side that they were just like, not even a bother going that direction, and we'll just attack, you know, Witherspoon, Maybin, whoever, you know, whoever's playing, you know, wide on the other side. And I think part of it was on reputation. I think part of it was just the corner play on the other side was so weak that it just left him alone.
More from Jeff Deeney of Pro Football Focus. We're going to get into the 2019 rookie class. But first, I'd like to take this opportunity to let you guys know about Blue Chew. Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra something. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's like blue, the color blue, and chew like you chew it. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
I haven't gotten the chance to talk to you yet since the draft, so let's get into some of the rookies, and I want to see how you feel about some of these draft picks and sort of the PFF angle. And I think PFF liked a lot of the players the 49ers drafted, especially their first pick. And I think whether you're looking at tape or grades, Nick Bosa pretty much was one of the cleanest prospects in this draft. Maybe if you're nitpicking, you would like him to be a little bit longer. You know, 33-inch arm length isn't maybe ideal. Maybe you would hope that he's faster in like a Khalil Mack sort of a way, but I mean, he's just a beast, and that's just nitpicking. You know, some injury stuff with him. He missed a lot of the 2018 season, but he graded very high basically the moment he showed up at Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, even his freshman year, he was a dominant, you know, in our grading and pass rush metrics. You know, his last two seasons, he had an overall grade of 95.2, which was the highest of any edge rusher in college since 2014. We started grading college guys. You know, he had a 25.5% pass rush win rate, which was the highest of any edge rusher since we've been doing it since 2014, just ahead of Myles Garrett and Joey Bosa's brother. I would say he's very similar to his brother, Joey. I mean, size, all that, the combine numbers. I mean, both are really good. You know, they win, excel with their hands. They got that swipe rip move that's really good, and then they can counter that and beat you inside. Good bull rush. I mean, I think the only nitpicking I would say is just, you know, is the health issue. I mean, he did tear an ACL in high school. He had the sports hernia thing at one point last year and missed most of the season. You know, didn't play a ton of snaps when he was playing. But, I mean, I think all along was, you know, at least from the Niners standpoint, because they're not looking for a quarterback, that he was the number one guy on the board. So, I mean, that was a no-brainer, and I think you know, Arizona going with Kyler Murray was definitely a gift to the Niners, where Bosa ended up falling to two.
One of the best stats I've seen from this offseason and the whole draft process was the Deebo stat that you threw out there, and I think I have it right. Was it 31 yards per catch on slants? So when he ran, when Deebo Samuel in college,
31 yards a catch on slant routes last year. I think it's 7 for 219 yards. I think one of them he took like 85 or something like that to the house, but yeah, it was 31 yards a catch and 20-something, I wish I had the number off the top of my head, it was like 20-something yards a catch, yards after the catch on slant routes. yeah, I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, that just shows that how dangerous of a guy he is once he gets one ahead of steam, but just what he is once he gets the ball in his hands after the catch, how dangerous he can be. Cause he averaged 9.5 yards after the catch, period, last year on all receptions. Yeah, so I mean, he's 23.4 yards after the catch on slants. That's what it was. But yeah, I mean, he's just really dangerous after the catch. And the interesting thing is, I'm, you know, the guy who gets, you know, really good job getting separation of the line of scrimmage. Like you said, dangerous after the catch. I mean, I think he can pretty much probably play anywhere. I'll be curious to see where, you know, Kyle Shanahan puts him. I think, you know, to me, they're kind of a match made in heaven. I think, you know, Shanahan seems to like guys, one, can get separation, and two, are, you know, really good once they get the ball in their hands. And, you know, kind of saw that with Dante Pettis, although last year, I think Samuel's another example. But, you know, he lined up outside, you know, wide probably almost 80% of the time last year, and then 20% of the slot. But he was much more productive in the slot last season. His target, I think, is something like 51% when he lined up in the slot. So, and some of those were screen passes, but still, I mean, you know, he was heavily targeted in the slot. I think he averaged like 4.6 yards per pass route run in the slot, which is one of the best in college football last year. So, I think he can play all over. I think one of the things I'm excited about this season to see is what Kyle Shanahan has in store for him.
The college game has gone crazy with targeting the slot, and especially with the way teams spread it out. I remember the first time I watched Deebo Samuel's tape, I was not super impressed. It wasn't so much that I wasn't impressed by him. I was so bored of the offense, and it's the reason the pro game I like so much more than the college game, because like screens and crossers, and it's just like, oh, it's not fun. It's not fun football to watch, and I was sort of just bored watching him kind of run half-speed crossing routes to just find a hole in the zone. Then they'd hit him, and then he could do his thing. And the slant route is one of the pro-style routes that he actually got a chance to run, so you would see him run that and see him nearly house every one of them, and it was awesome to see. And then when he went to the Senior Bowl and was able to show that full route tree and run all of those style of routes and looked so good doing that, and then you went back to the tape after that, and I saw him, you know, try to just focus in on that, and it was like, okay, yeah, that's it. That's the good stuff. So Deebo Samuel, I'm really excited, and like you, I think it's a match made in heaven with the way Jimmy Garoppolo, he's so good throwing the ball to the middle of the field in that intermediate range. And so I think he's going to play that Pierre Garçon role, that Z receiver role, but that is a position that can move a lot and get in motion. So I think he will be in the slot quite a bit as well and have a chance to catch and run and do some of those things. And so I think it's a great fit, even though he wasn't the number one wide receiver. I think he was my third wide receiver in this draft. He's, I think, the perfect fit. And even he was, especially after the Senior Bowl, working with Kyle Shanahan and playing the Z for his South squad, it was pretty obvious. It was like, okay, that's just a perfect match there in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably the worst kept secret. I think that when that pick came up early in the second round, there was a good chance it was going to be Samuel after the Senior Bowl week he had.
How about Jalen Hurd? What are your thoughts on him? I was surprised how high he went in the draft. There's a lot to like there with his movement skills at his size. How do you think he's best utilized? I was a little bit shocked that Kyle Shanahan, the moment they drafted him, was like, yeah, he's going to play wide receiver, but he might be a H-back. And you're like, well, wait, which is it? Are you going to start? And you hope it's not like the Jimmy Ward situation or Tarvarius Moore. And it's like where you start bouncing a guy back and forth because it's really hard. It's hard enough for young NFL players to catch a footing in the league and to bounce around positions. I think it makes it even more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another thing that Shanahan seems to love is the versatility, especially on offense. I mean, you see guys like, you know, Pettis and Samuel can probably line up all over. And I mean, Kyle Juszczyk is the obvious example of that, who can play fullback. He was their third down back for most of last year. He can line up in line at tight end. He can line up in a slot outside. You know, there's no go routes to him, you know, outside. I mean, I think he almost, especially now you look at the running back, some of Tevin Coleman and McKinnon, you know, they can line up. All right, sir. It's like whoever he puts out there, whatever personnel package, whether it's 12 or 21 or whatever, it's like they can, you know, they put him out in the huddle, but then they could line up anywhere. I mean, you don't know where Juszczyk's going to line up. You don't know where Tevin Coleman might line up, McKinnon. If Jalen Hurd gets on the field, who knows where he's going to line up. I mean, I was a little surprised at the pick, too. I want to say Hakeem Butler was still available at the time. I thought that was the guy they might go after if they want another wide receiver. But, I mean, like you said, he was a running back at Tennessee, transferred to Baylor, had almost 1,000 yards last year. Pretty much almost all from the slot last season. I think that's where the interesting thing is, because obviously he's a big guy. I don't know. I think he needs to prove his blocking. He's going to play in line or in a tight end position.
Yeah.
I think if he's going to line up outside, he's probably going to look better against press coverage too. But, you know, he might be a guy, we just talked about the running backs, but like, I don't think the Niners really have a big banger at running back, you know, unless they use checks on short yards, you know, situation. So maybe he's a short yardage back, perhaps. You know, but he's somebody, like I said, really good size, really good after the catch. I think probably a little raw just because he only played wide receiver for 1 year and kind of more of a developmental guy a bit. But, you know, there's some good film on him at Baylor at wide receiver. And, you know, I think if he can develop, he definitely can be kind of another one of those offensive weapons that Kyle Shanahan really likes.
And I'm starting to wonder about Kyle Shanahan's offense and how, because we've seen the defensive scheme. There's the wide nine coming to town now, and it's not the hugest deal, I think, you know, having a defensive end that maybe lines up a foot further outside than he was going to, or 18 inches or whatever. It's not a massive deal. I think maybe people are making too much of a deal about that, but it is going to change how they're playing behind it. So now you're not going to have that traditional Sam in this cover three scheme, and it's going to be more of three traditional linebackers in base. And then they're talking about how they're going to do a little bit more split coverage on the back end. So the defensive scheme might look a little bit different or be a little bit more multiple this year than it was last year. And I'm wondering if the offense is going to be the same. They bring in someone like Jalen Hurd, who's a big slot guy, and he was pretty much always the furthest in. And if the listeners out there don't watch Baylor football, I talked about how I don't like watching the spread offenses in the college game. And Baylor's like one of the biggest culprits of this. They're just like, it's so different. And Corey Coleman was a big bust out of Baylor a few years ago. And he literally, if it was a run play, he would not touch the man in front of him. He would stand there, wait for the play to end because they wanted to go fast. They wanted him to be fresh. It wasn't because he didn't want to block. It's because they told him, don't block, just stand there. Your guy's going to just stand there with you probably and essentially be blocked anyway. And so, you know, it's that thing where they go to the line of scrimmage, look at the sideline. They're always lined up with five wide. You've got three wide receivers on one side. Pretty much Jalen Hurd was always lined up the furthest in toward, which is why you can kind of see, maybe, okay, the H-back thing. He's got, you know, he's 230 pounds. He could probably put on another 10 pounds and be closer to his 240, 250 weight when he was a running back. And I can really see that. And even though I didn't love the pick when it happened, I'm interested to see how they use him and how he develops, because he does have some obvious skills in that running back short area quickness in a 6'4", 230-pound frame is interesting. He's a unique player. And so you bring in someone like Jalen Hurd, and obviously they drafted him pretty high at the top of the third round. They spent a few free agent dollars on Jordan Matthews, who traditionally in his career and even going back to Vanderbilt has been a big slot receiver. You bring in Wes Welker as a wide receivers coach. Debo can play in the slot. Trent Taylor is pretty much a slot-only type of a player. Richie James can play in the slot. Dante Pettis can play in the slot. It's like George Kittle. So it's like I just have a feeling the offense is going to look a little bit different and maybe even a little bit more New England Patriot-like and really just hammer the middle of the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, it was kind of a thing last year. I was like, well, they don't have any big wide receivers or red zone guys or whatever. I mean, I kind of always think Dante Pettis is a red zone guy. If you look at his numbers back at Washington, he's just not one of those big 6'4", 6'5", guys you would throw fade routes to if you kind of like to throw fade routes. But, they brought in Jordan Matthews. They said it's Jalen Hurd. Jordan Matthews might be a guy who, I don't say he's an odd man out, but he may, if everyone stays healthy, might have a tough time making the team with all the guys. You know, they brought in, you know, with Samuel and Hurd and, like a Pettis and, you know, you just mentioned Richie James. I think Trent Taylor never, he was probably hurt most of last year with the back surgery. You know, he should hopefully be better this year. So a lot of options in the slot. And you mentioned George Kittle is another example, you know, and not a team that ran 11 personnel a whole lot. I mean, they ran it about 40% last year, which I think the NFL average is, I think, 63%. I mean, they're more running, you know, 21 personnel more than anything. So not usually having more than two wide receivers on the field, at least half the time anyway. So there's not a ton of slot snaps there if you're going back on last year's numbers. So, I mean, I don't know if they're going to try and spread out a little more or with all the running backs, they're just going to go 31 personnel and everybody and get them all on the field at the same time. But, it'll be interesting to see what is changes this year now with the changes in personnel.
You could put Debo in the backfield too. I mean, he's built like a running back anyway.
Oh yeah, another guy. He actually put up some really good numbers. They're running, you know, when he's carrying the football last year too. So that's another option as well. I mean, both him and Hurd have experience, from scrimmage.
That would be fun. Do the opposite of the spread and just have everybody in the backfield, but you're really throwing out of that set. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate of like I said, you know, bring in like 21 two tight ends or 22, you know, whatever, and being able to throw and have a bunch of weapons as opposed to, or you know, lining up at 10 or 11% and be able to run it down your throat. I think it's, you know, keeping the defense guessing at all times.
Yeah, and it could be like basically as close as you're going to get in the modern game to being sort of a positionless offense when it comes to those skill position guys. Got to step away momentarily. This podcast is brought to you in part by Hotels.com and Grip Six Belts. Back with Jeff Deeney, analyst at Pro Football Focus. Jeff, we were talking about potential for a positionless offense, the versatile weapons available to Kyle Shanahan. And even another guy that they could add to that is the former Australian rules footballer and the punter out of Utah, Mitch Wishnowsky, 27-year-old punter in the fourth round. Jeff, break it down. Why was Mitch Wishnowsky the guy for the 49ers in round four? Is he that good?
I assumed that they all along with Pinion leaving, if they were going to take a punter, and I figured it was either going to be Wishnowsky or Jake Bailey at Stanford. Yeah, it was a little earlier than I had thought. I know they tried to explain something about how I think Bailey went to New England maybe at the end of the fifth, and that's why they had to take him then. I mean, at least they moved back in the fourth round, were able to get a couple extra picks before they took Wisnowski. You know, it might have been a little earlier than needed, but when there's only two probably draftable punters on the board, it's not like another position where there's like 30 corners and you just go to the next corner. So I think they were wanting to make sure they got their guy. And it sounded like they researched the death and Wisnowski was their guy. I mean, he was our top punter in 2016. He was second last year behind Bailey in 2018. I mean, he's another guy who, you know, he held for field goals and extra points at Utah. He handled kickoff duties in 2017. So he can do all the things that Bradley Pinion did last year on special teams. You know, really good guy, gets you really good hang time, good job getting it inside the 10 or the 20 for you. You know, 27 years old, of course, he's a punter, so, I mean, that's not a huge deal. But, you know, I think he'll be much better than, you know, Bradley Pinion kind of struggled a little bit last year. But a little earlier than I think I would have expected, many people did, but they probably did get the best punter in the draft.
Do any of the names stick out to you from the later day three picks? Dre Greenlaw in the fifth round, they all have their own reason why they were late picks and not early picks. Greenlaw is an undersized linebacker, just flat out doesn't take on blocks, but I like some of his athleticism as a former safety and ability to run guys down. He's a pretty good tackler when he gets there and can cover. Caden Smith, an under-athletic, really just a lot like Garrett Celek. If you want a Garrett Celek 2.0, I think Caden Smith might be that guy. I think he is not as good of a blocker as you'd expect for his size coming out of Stanford. Justin School's just been a solid, if not spectacular, left tackle for a long time, offensive tackle for a long time for Vanderbilt. He's just played a lot of snaps. He's kind of got bad body. I'm sure if scouts had a body bias against Justin School just because how top heavy he is. And then I think the guy that had the best PFF grades out of these late picks for the 49ers was their last pick in Tim Harris.
I think with Tim Harris, he missed, another guy who's been battling a lot of injuries. He missed most of 2016, 2017. Wasn't even starting at the beginning of 2018. They kind of claimed the starting job during the season. He ended with an 87.1 coverage grade on our site, in our system, and was 11th best in the draft class. So, I mean, kind of as far as PFF metrics go, I think we thought he was very good value there. You talked about Dre Greenwald again, a little bit undersized, but, he kind of graded in the mid to high 60s in his 3 years in Arkansas with us. Like I said, very good speed. I think he ran in the 4.5 as pro day. I think it's one thing you're looking at with those off-ball linebackers with, like, with the Quan Alexander signing and Fred Warner and Dre Greenwald, and this maybe kind of goes with that wide nine defense now, but those three guys all very, very fast at that second level. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do there. I think at least at the beginning he can be a special teams contributor, and then we'll see how it goes. But, Caden Smith, I end up watching a lot of Stanford football. As a guy I really loved, I mean, he fell in the sixth round. I think he ran about a 4.9 40.
Yep.
At pro, I don't know if it was a pro day or his combine now that I think of it, but, was a guy, Stanford loved to have him go up the seam. They were throwing him, go routes up the seam. He was just tremendous at making contested catches in traffic. He caught 13 of his 17 go routes he threw him last year and averaged 24.5 yards a catch on him. Really good hands. Like you said, maybe not quite the blocker you think he might be with the size, but I think he's one of those guys, like I said, you can throw up to him and he'll bring it down for you. And I think he's, especially now with Garrett Celek, I know there were still some issues with the concussion and some other injuries. I don't know if it was back, if I remember off the top of my head, but he said he didn't participate in the OTA. So, he might be a guy you could try to fight for the number two spot. I know they have the other guy from Stanford that they signed from Atlanta, who, could be a red zone threat. Another big guy, 6'7". So I think those are your guys you're looking at in the tight end pool. And like I said, you mentioned Justin School. Not the most athletic-looking guy, but he only allowed one sack last year on 473 pass-blocking snaps, and that was to Josh Allen of Kentucky. Had a 79.7 pass-blocking grade last year, which, in the SEC, that's pretty good. So I think you're looking at him probably competing with Sean Coleman for that swing tackle spot behind Staley and McGlinchey. So, they all, like I said, they all kind of have their warts, and that's why they've fallen down that far, but they all have some potential, too.
I thought it was funny. Shout-out to your PFF colleagues. I think it was maybe Sam that made the joke about Tim Harris, because Tim Harris is sort of an older prospect too, and even though he really liked Tim Harris, he was like, yeah, this is a very old prospect, 24 years old. He was part of the same recruiting class as Christian Hackenberg, and Hackenberg has already flamed out of two pro football leagues. So that's how old of a prospect Tim Harris is coming in. And he's had some injuries, and that's why it's taken him so long to get to the NFL. But when he's been on the field, he's played really well, and he's a great fit for the scheme.
I have to give PFF Sam props for when Christian Hackenberg came up for the draft, and so many people left, and he wrote an article basically saying how he thought he was undraftable and shouldn't be in the draft and should have been basically put an undrafted free agent tag on him, which drew some controversy at the time. But I mean, now it seems to be right on the mark.
Yep, nailed that one. And he was one of those guys that was so obvious. Was like, okay, yeah, great arm, but he has nothing else. And it was one of those things like,
no,
the NFL is just, they just swoon over that arm talent. And I thought Josh Allen, to maybe to a lesser degree last year when he got drafted by Buffalo in the top 10, I was like, man, a lot of arm talent, but there is some work to be done there too. But then there's guys that, I mean, in Kansas City's pretty happy about spending a top 10 pick on their strong arm quarterback, even though it looked kind of funky coming out of Texas Tech, but very different results there.
Yeah, I mean, Hackenberg's metrics on our site, I mean, just between grades and accuracy numbers, and he was awful when he was under pressure. I mean, nothing just stood out in our numbers at all that he was going to be, you know, viable enough a quarterback, let alone just kind of the eye test and watching film. So we kind of hung our hat on that one, and unfortunately the Jets took him, I think, in the second round, if I remember correctly, and yeah, well, that's why they're the Jets.
Yep, second round, people are talking about as a first-round guy, so some people were surprised he dropped that far, which is like, wow. But that's why the Jets were drafting third. They were drafting the top five because they can't get that quarterback thing right. They might have their quarterback now. Hopefully the 49ers have their quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. We're out of time here, Jeff. It's always a pleasure. I always appreciate the time you give me to come on in and drop some of these nuggets. I love these stats, and I'm just super excited about slant god Deebo Samuel, and he's going to house some for the 49ers this year.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Jeff for joining the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be back tomorrow with another Winky Wednesday and my guest, Nick Winkler. We will be getting back into that mailbag, talking about everything going on in 49er land this offseason. Hit me up on Twitter with those mailbag questions at BD Peacock. You can also email the program, LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the show, the new Himalaya podcast app. Talk to you tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.